welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you shows from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In this hour, crime stories. Later on, we hear the tale Murder Needs an Artist with Vincent Price. But right now, it's The Lineup, a CBS broadcast from June 28, 1951.
Ladies and gentlemen, we take you now behind the scenes of a police headquarters in a great American city, where under the cold, glaring lights will pass before us the innocent, the vagrant, the thief, the murderer. This is The Lineup.
Sit right here, Mr. Hunter.
How many men will we look at?
31 altogether. Our man probably won't be any of these, but
may
we want to cover
have
every possibility.
Please? You people out there on the other side of the wire in the audience room, may I have your attention? Thank you. My name is Greb, Sergeant Matt Greb. I'll explain the lineup to you. Each of the suspects you will see will be numbered. I'll call off a number, their name, and charge. If you have any questions or identifications, please remember the number assigned to the prisoner as I call his name. Please be prompt with your questions or identifications. The questions I ask these suspects simulate get a natural tone of voice, so do not pay too much attention to their answers as they often lie. Bring on the line. All right. Come on. Move it up to the end of the stage. Right on up to the end, that's right. Now turn and face front hands to your sides and look straight ahead. Now, when I ask you questions, talk up so the people in the back can hear you. All right, number one, John Nathay, robbery. Face front and talk up. Where do you live, John?
66 on River Street.
What's that?
Seaman's Hotel.
Don't look at me. Look right out front so the people can see you. Right. What do you do, John?
Ship's cook.
Anybody arrested with you?
No.
Any weapons?
Yes, sir.
Pistol, wasn't it?
Yes, sir.
What kind of pistol?
32, I think.
38, I know.
Yes, sir.
You have a car?
Yeah, Chrysler.
Well, a sedan, a coupe, or what?
Sedan.
What color?
Black.
Okay. Number two, David Moore, assault. Where do you live, Dave?
205 South Meade.
Can't hear him, Matt.
Now, look, I don't want to tell you boys again. It's a long way to the back of the room, so you got to talk up. Come on, now. Where do you work, Dave?
A fisherman's son.
What do you do? What's your work?
A Tom.
Your landlady says you hit her.
Yes, sir.
With what?
A hot plate.
Something you cook on?
Yes, sir. I was cooking. She said I was smelling up the building.
Why did you hit her?
Oh, it's a long story, Sergeant. You'd have to know my landlady.
Okay, number three, Ivan Seiberling, drunk and disorderly.
Any of these men, Mr. Hunter?
No. Clay Park, 644 North Hodgson Place, Sergeant.
Don't tell me. Tell the people out there.
Yeah.
What do you do, Ivan?
Construction engineer.
You were pretty drunk.
Yes, sir.
The arresting officer said he's had complaints before.
Yes, sir. She has complained for a week.
Who's she?
My wife.
You live at 644 North Hudson?
Yes, sir.
The report says you broke a window at that address.
The door was locked. I broke one other night, too, when she locked me out. I will keep right on breaking them until she leaves door unlocked.
Maybe you'd better stop drinking.
Yes, sir.
Any questions or identifications from the audience?
How about it, Mr. Hunter? Number two was picked up in your neighborhood.
No.
Any questions or identifications from the audience?
Okay, we'll look at the next bunch. Nothing, Matt.
All right, sir. All right, run them off. Bring on the next line.
Cup of coffee, Mr. Hunter?
Thank you.
Yeah, we won't keep you much longer. There you are.
Thank you.
Sergeant Greb should be here any minute now.
Hi.
This is Mr. Hunter, man. Sergeant Greb.
Well, how do you do, Mr. Hunter?
Sergeant?
Grab a chair, man.
Thanks. Hey, I voted for you in the last election, Mr. Hunter.
Good.
Yeah, didn't you spot anybody in the line at all?
No, I didn't.
Coffee, man?
No, thanks.
Mr. Hunter can't think of anybody who'd want to kill him.
And you can't remember seeing anybody suspicious hanging around your house?
No, I can't, Sergeant.
Well, none of your neighbors saw anybody either.
Here's the report from the lab. Bomb was a time bomb. Found pieces of an old alarm clock. From the size of the explosion, must have been about 8 or 10 sticks of dynamite.
Oh, Sure lucky you and the family were in the back of the house.
Very lucky.
Yeah, we'll do our best to catch whoever it was, sir.
Probably just a crank. A man like myself, politics, public figure, makes a lot of enemies for one reason or another. Maybe this one didn't vote for me last election, Sergeant. Come to think of it, maybe.
Well, we may want to talk to you again, sir. And oh, pardon me. Guthrie. Yeah? Oh, yeah? How long ago? Anyone hurt? Right, sure. Another bombing.
What?
Friend of yours, Councilman Adams.
Well, was he hurt?
Yeah, both he and his wife. They're in the hospital.
They've got a child.
No, the child's all right. Ruined the house.
Were Adams and his wife hurt badly?
Well, I don't know. Ambulance took him away. I'll have to check with the hospital.
This is awful. Everybody should certainly be warned.
Well, they will be, including the mayor. We'll put a man with you and your family, Mr. Hunter. In the meanwhile, we'll go and look at Mr. Adams' house.
Thinks maybe he saw the guy who planted the bomb.
Oh, well, let's go talk to him. Go over and talk to Chief Anderson, Matt. See what he's got to say about the damage.
Sure.
This man's a neighbor. His name's Crump. Mr. Crump.
Yes, Sergeant?
This is Lieutenant Guthrie.
How are you, Mr. Crump?
Oh, glad to meet you, Lieutenant.
Let's move over here where we can talk.
All right.
All right. Now, tell the Lieutenant just what you told me, Mr. Crump.
Well, about 4:30, I was working in my backyard mowing the lawn, and I saw Mrs. Adams get into her car and drive out of the garage. Well, about an hour later, I went around front to get the hose, and I saw an old truck pull up across the street. I saw a man get out, kind of an old man, you know, old clothes. Mm-hmm. He went around the back of the truck and took out something that looked like a box. It was about this big, I guess.
Yeah.
Then he headed for the Adams house. A couple hours later, I was sitting in my living room, and I saw Mr. and Mrs. Adams pull up in front of their house and go in. A little while later, my wife and I were having dinner, and the explosion happened. Busted most of the windows in our house. I didn't think about the old guy with the box until I found out what had happened tonight. I remembered reading about this other bombing yesterday. Figured that box the old guy was carrying might have been the bomb.
Yeah, I see. Can you remember what this old guy looked like?
Well, maybe if I saw him again.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of a truck was he driving?
Oh, it's a real old one. Really beat up at an old Ford or Chevy. You know, one of those pickups. What did you say?
I said you didn't get the license number.
Oh, no. Why would I get it? I didn't even think anything about it until after the explosion.
Well, if you saw him again, do you think you might recognize him?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, all right. Thank you very much, Mr. Crump. We'll keep in touch with you.
Oh, glad to help.
Fine. Get Mr. Crump's phone number and anything we might need.
Right.
I'll be up with Matt.
Okay.
Ben.
Yeah.
Okay. Hello, Guthrie.
Quite a mess, huh?
Yeah. Bomb do all that?
Bomb and the fire. Used more dynamite than the last time. Blew this room sky high. Oh, watch out for the glare.
Yeah.
The center of the explosion was right about here.
Uh-huh.
Probably walked up to the side of the house, stuck the bomb into that opening in the foundation. Surprised nobody saw him.
Well, somebody thinks he did.
Well, you better catch this boy. He hasn't killed anybody yet, but he's trying pretty hard.
Paper says snow. How'd you make out with Crump?
Nothing. He looked through the whole mug file, not a thing.
I talked to the hospital this morning. Adams isn't going to be all right.
No luck on that old Ford pickup?
Uh-uh. Why don't you turn up the heat?
Oh, okay.
Say, I'll bet we get a blizzard. We're due, you know.
Guthrie? Yeah? And what was he wearing? That sounds like him. We'll be right down. Well, maybe we got the bomber.
Yeah?
20 minutes ago, picked up a man wearing old coveralls and a dirty leather jacket coming out of the state building. Spotted him. Followed him 3 blocks before they grabbed him. He was climbing into an old Ford pickup.
with 30 sticks of dynamite in the back of the truck. All set, Matt?
Yeah, Ben. I got Crump sitting out front.
How many men are you going to show?
Three besides the suspect.
Okay. I'll go sit with Crump. Hello, Mr. Crump?
Hello. Oh, Lieutenant Guthrie, I couldn't see.
Yeah, well, we want you to look at some suspects.
Oh, that's what Sergeant Greb said.
Yeah, we think one of them might be the man who planted the bombs.
Well, I hope I can help.
All right, Ben, run them on.
Yes, sir. Lights! Bring them on, Quine. All right, come on, move out to the end of the stage. Come on. Down the line.
They all got on coveralls and leather jackets.
Now, take a good look.
All right, now, turn.
The man
on
the end, Lieutenant.
Yeah, what about him?
Yeah, that's the man, no doubt about it. I remember better than I thought I would. He's the one that got out of the truck, all right. The one with the box.
All right, Matt, run him off.
Yes, sir. That's all. Fire off.
Now, we'll need a statement from you, Mr. Crump.
Oh, sure. What were the others arrested for?
They weren't, Mr. Crump. Three others were police officers.
Edmund O'Brien, who plays the title role in Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, will be on his latest case tomorrow night over most of these same CBS stations. In one of his most thrilling investigations, Johnny Dollar goes to London to join forces with the men from Scotland Yard in the Hatchet House theft matter. How that London trip had Johnny Dollar's famous old expense account. Don't miss Johnny Dollar on Wednesdays.
Be a tough nut. Arresting officers couldn't get a thing out of him. We've got men over there talking with people in the state building. So far, nobody remembers seeing him come in.
Yeah. Name's Lewis Black, huh?
Yeah, driver's license, gave his address at 1910 East Flower. Ash is over there now checking. I wonder what he was doing in the state building.
Yeah, I'm worried, too.
I wonder if... Oh, no. No, he couldn't have.
A big building. I hope you're right. Hello, Lewis. I'm Lieutenant Guthrie. This is Sergeant Greb. Quine?
Yeah.
We'll see you upstairs.
Right.
Sit down, Lewis. I want to talk to you about these bombings.
We know you made those bombs.
A man saw you walk up to the Adams house with one of them.
It's sheer cold in here, isn't it?
Yeah, it started to snow.
That's right.
Why don't you tell us about it?
Well, I made them, sure.
Why?
I made them. I don't have to tell you why.
You put one of them under George Hunter's house. Do you know him?
Know who he is.
But you don't know him personally?
No.
Did you know Adams?
No.
Well, then why try to kill him?
Isn't there a heater in here or something? I've been out of work.
Been out of work long?
Yeah.
Hunter or Adams have something to do with it?
You sure want to know why I made those bombs, don't you?
We'd like to know.
It's no fun being out of work. I've been out of work for a long time. You ever been out of work?
Yeah.
Well, then you know it's no fun.
You try to get a job?
Oh, sure, I couldn't. I kept trying. Just couldn't get one. Look, do we have to sit in here? It's really getting kind of cold.
We'll get out of here as soon as you tell us about it.
Don't try to push me. I don't like being pushed around. I can stand it down here just as long as you can.
We're not trying to push you.
No?
No. We don't like this any better than you do. It's just a job. If it weren't us, it'd be somebody else.
Okay, then.
If you had a job, you'd try to do it the best you could, wouldn't you?
Well, sure. I used to have jobs all the time. I always did the best I could.
What kind of jobs did you have?
Oh, all kinds. I was miner once. I worked in Pennsylvania.
Is that where you're from, Pennsylvania?
Yeah, I did all kinds of jobs once. Then I couldn't get a job. Nobody would give me a job. That's the trouble. It's not enough jobs. I got to do something about getting jobs for people. A bunch of dirty politicians. They don't worry about guys like me. They make speeches, sure. Yeah, they get elected. They don't do nothing.
Like Adams and Hunter.
You're darn right. Adams, Hunter, a whole bunch.
Even the mayor.
Sure, the mayor.
And the governor.
He's the worst one of the bunch. He's the biggest. He could do something if he wanted to, but he don't. Gee, I ain't had a job in 3 years.
Now. You'd like to take care of him like you did Adams and Hunter, wouldn't you?
I'm not going to tell you anything. You think I'm going to tell you something, don't you? But I'm not.
What were you doing in the state building?
Why don't you try and find out?
Look, Lewis, we don't want you to get into any more trouble than you're already in.
I don't want to talk anymore. I want to go back to my cell. I'm cold.
You can go back to your cell as soon as you talk.
Oh, Lieutenant, can I see you a minute?
Yeah, Clark.
Sergeant, can we have some heat in here? I'm cold.
Ben, we've got a janitor upstairs from the state building. He remembers seeing Lewis Black come into the building by the side entrance. He says Black was carrying a big box.
Holy. Look, see that the state building's cleared as fast as possible. Rope off the street. Step on it.
Right.
Lewis, I just found out that you planted a bomb in the state building.
I don't care what you found out. I'm not going to tell you.
I'm tired of playing with you. Where's that bomb? Where did you put it?
Oh, sugar, you can do anything you want. Get rough. Beat me. I won't tell you where I put that bomb.
Well, at least tell us when it's set to go off.
What time is it?
And it's 5:06.
You won't find it.
How much time?
About 40 minutes, I guess.
Everybody's out of the building. You find out where he put it?
No, he wants it to go off. We got him over in the car with Walter and Asher. They'll keep working on him.
It's Army car. Captain Phillips, demolition expert.
I'm Phillips.
And Guthrie, hope we can use you.
Know what kind of a bomb it is?
Quine will tell you all we know. We've got to get into that building and try to find it.
There's 30 men in there now covering every floor.
Who's in charge?
Harrison. He's in the basement.
Come on, man. What time is it?
We've got about 25 minutes, more or less.
Any luck?
Not yet, Lieutenant.
Harrison's still in the basement?
Yeah, Dano's there.
Thanks. Harrison.
Yeah, over here, Ben.
Well, any luck?
No. How much time we got?
Less than 25 minutes. What orders did you give?
Well, if the bomb's found, it's to be taken directly to the street. If we've still got any time left, the car will drive it to a safe place. That army man get here?
Yeah.
Well, this is the way I want it to go. It's 5:13 by my watch. I'll set your watch.
Right.
Now, at exactly 5:25, order your men out of here. Tell them they've got 10 minutes to get clear. We'll go tell the rest on the other floors.
Right, Ben.
All right, men, come on. Let's look under the stairs. Check
that. Can you run an elevator, man?
Well, sure.
Now take the second floor. I'll take the ordnance, third, fifth, and so on. Be sure they set their watches with yours.
Right, Ben.
Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
You got a watch?
Yes, sir.
Set it with mine. In 5 seconds, it'll be 5:14:35. Now. Okay. Have all your men off this floor by 5:25.
5:25, yes, sir.
Ben.
5:25.
Everybody's out.
Yeah.
Well, what do we do?
That's a good question. If Black wasn't lying, we've got something like 10 minutes. Man.
Yeah?
Go out to the car and get Black.
Huh?
Go out and get Black. Maybe the last thing I do, but I'm going to find out where that bomb is.
Wait a minute. Suppose you find out where the bomb is. Who's going to watch Black while you get it?
I'll worry about that when I get to it.
I'm staying.
Okay, I can't argue. How about it, Black? You want to tell us where it is?
You'll never find it.
What time is it?
5:28.
Ah, you can't scare me. You think if you keep me here, I tell you where the bomb is, eh?
About 5 minutes, huh?
I guess so.
You're not very smart. I said 40 minutes. Well, maybe 40, but maybe not. I can't be sure. Might go off in a second.
I guess so.
Ah, who are you kidding? You won't stay in here. You're scared.
Listen, Black. You're downright was scared. But so help me, you're going to tell us where that bomb is or it's going to blow all of us sky high. Now, shut up unless you want to tell us.
I'm not afraid to die.
Well, you're going to have a chance.
8 stories in this building.
Yeah.
If it's too far away, We may not have time anyway.
Let me out of here.
Travis, you're not going anywhere.
You're going to stay right here until you tell us where it is.
I'll tell you, I won't.
Well,
I won't.
Shut up.
$529.
Black, you're not doing anything but wrecking a building and killing yourself. You can't get the governor. He's been taken out.
You can't make me tell you.
Okay, okay.
How much dynamite's in that bomb, Lewis?
50 sticks.
Hope you guessed right about the time.
Ben?
Yeah?
I told you would snow.
Oh. Gonna be a big one. Lewis, why don't you tell us?
I can stand it if you can.
5:30.
All right. I'll tell you. It's in the beach.
Show us.
All right.
Step on it.
How much time is it?
Not much. Can you stop it?
Yeah.
Now, where?
Up there, on top of the big pipe. You see in the back?
How did you get up there?
Here, with the ladder. And where's the ladder? Everything's been moved.
Forget the ladder. Show us the spot.
It's right about here.
Give him a boost up.
Come on. Put your foot in my hand.
Go. Put it on. No, I'm scared.
No. Okay.
Let you down here. Let it go off. We don't care. We might not have time to stop.
Can I tear off these boards without setting it off?
Yeah.
Well, explain it to me while I rip them off.
I don't remember. Please, let's get out of here.
If you want to get out of here alive, you better remember.
Oh, this is dynamite. It's an old alarm clock. It's batteries and breakers. The alarm goes off and causes a circuit in the batteries.
Okay. Now take it apart.
No. Let me get out of here.
You're going to stay right here.
You'll blow us all up with you.
Now, you settle down.
Come on, Lewis. Tell me. Tell me what to do.
The wires from the battery to the dynamite. Pull them loose.
These?
Yes, those.
Okay. Now, you sure that does it?
Yes.
All right. Let's get it out to the street.
Can you make it all right, Ben?
Yeah. All right, let's go.
All right, Lewis.
Give me that
thing.
It would have.
Ben, I may be late to the station in the morning. I'm going to take my alarm clock and throw it as far as I can.
Before you pass the innocent, the vagrant, the thief, the murderer. Listen again an hour earlier, a week from next Thursday, when we will again bring you The Lineup.
May I have your attention, please? People out there in the side of the wire in the audience room, may I have your attention?
The Lineup, starring Bill Johnstone as Lieutenant Guthrie and Wally Mayer as Sergeant Matt Greb, is written by Blake Edwards with music by Eddie Dunstetter. Howard McNear was heard as Lewis Black. Featured in tonight's cast were Jim Backus, Hi Everback, Sidney Miller, Peter Leeds, Joe Duvall, and Harry Lang. The Lineup is produced and directed by Jaime Del Valle.
The Lineup on Tuned to Yesterday, a CBS radio broadcast from June 28, 1951. You're listening to an hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now one of the most recognizable faces, but also voices from radio and movies past, it's Vincent Price as star in the story Murder Needs an Artist, featured on the Philip Morris Playhouse. The CBS radio broadcast from May 6th, 1950.
Johnny presents the Philip Morris Playhouse, produced, edited, and directed by William Spear. Tonight's star, Vincent Price. And now, with Vincent Price as star, we bring you Murder Needs an Artist, tonight's production in the Philip Morris Playhouse.
you see, D.A. Case just sort of dropped in our laps. Oh, excuse me. You want a cigarette?
Thanks. You said over the phone there was a confession.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Gogarty took it down only about a half hour ago. Yeah, have a look.
George Aloysius Hilton. Who is he, you know?
No, a writer of some kind. Never saw him on any bestseller list, but he had imagination, all right. Go on, read it. You see what I mean?
The whole thing began less than 2 months ago while I was working on a new novel. It was to be about the gutter life of New York, but somehow it lacked believability. In desperation, I hit on the idea of spending several days in the typical Bowery flophouse.
I put on my shabbiest suit, locked my apartment, and decided on the Ritz Arms. 15 cents a night. It was a big room with one high window and cots lining all four walls. There weren't any sheets or blankets on the beds, only moth-eaten threadbare mattresses and a heavy whiskey odor permeated the room. When I came to cot number 13, the cot I'd been assigned, I saw it already had an occupant. Oh, excuse me, but I think this is my cot.
What's that? What's that you say?
This cot. There seems to be some mistake.
Oh, no. There's no mistake. She's dead. She's been dead 20 years. If she weren't, do you think I'd be in a place like this?
I'm afraid you don't understand. I...
Thank you. Oh, I'm sorry. I can't offer you anything, but you see, this is my butler's night off, and, well, I never was much good at mixing a martini. You'll excuse me, won't you? You must come again soon. It's been very nice chatting with you. Very nice.
I took another cot nearby. Oh, this was great. My first 5 minutes in this place, and I had already discovered a character. I had just taken out my notebook and pencil to jot down an idea when somebody on the cot next to mine began coughing, and I turned my head. It was Grayson, Christopher Grayson. And yet it couldn't be. I sat there absolutely paralyzed. It was insane, impossible. Grayson was dead. He died 6 years ago. Grayson.
Well, what did you say?
Who are you?
Who am I? That is something I would like to know myself.
You are, Grayson.
My dear sir, for a drink I will be anybody you say. How about it, huh? Doesn't have to be a big drink, just a little drink so high, huh? If you don't, I'll commit suicide, huh? I'll jump right through that window.
He was pointing at a solid wall. I gave him a dollar bill and he collapsed into an ecstatic stupor. He looked exactly like Grayson. Of course, I'd only met him a few times at parties, but his was a face you didn't forget, that it couldn't be. I sat down on my cot and thought of Grayson. Grayson, who'd slaved at his canvases all his life without making a penny and then burned to death in a cheap hotel room with his paintings all around him. Grayson, whose work was fabulous now, another genius recognized too late. Suddenly the Ritz Arms became very depressing. And then I saw them. Under his cot, I saw them, the half-crumpled sheets of paper. I picked them up. They were sketches, penciled, rough drafts for paintings. Rough drafts that proved beyond the shadow of a doubt that this derelict was Christopher Grayson. I bent over him and shook him hard.
Yeah. Leave me alone. Oh, it's you. You gave me this dollar.
Yes, but never mind that now. These sketches, did you do them?
Oh, what if I did?
But they're good. You studied somewhere. You must have. Don't you remember where?
I remember only brands of beer.
Now look, try to think. Have you ever painted with oils?
Oils? I haven't touched oils since...
Yes, go ahead.
It's funny, I don't know why I said that. Things like that just come to me sometimes, especially when I haven't had a drink. I think I'll go outside and get a drink right now.
No, wait a minute. Don't go. I just got an idea.
Eh?
Look, how would you like to have a drink anytime you wanted?
Are you kidding?
No, I mean it. How would you like a scotch and soda or a straight rye or a brandy?
Stop it! What are you trying to do to me?
Look, it's yours if you'll come with me.
Hey.
Quiet. I'm trying to get my rest.
Look.
Jedi, you know.
Look, maybe I'm not quite bright, but why the sudden interest in me?
Well, you see, I'm I'm a writer.
Oh.
Yes, I'm doing a book on the Bowery, and I thought maybe...
Wait a minute. Let me get this straight. You want to use me as a subject,
Well,
eh?
Now, not exactly.
You want to take me like you would a filthy little germ, stick me under a microscope to see what makes me tick. Well, don't you?
Look, I'm sorry if I've offended you.
Offended me? Oh, no. You've only insulted my human dignity, that's all. I'll take the job. I'll do anything for a drink. I sunk that low.
Grayson spent the night with me in my rooms, a bottle in his lap. Early the next morning, while he was still out cold, I made some purchases at Hobart's Art Supply Center off 3rd Avenue.
Will that be all, sir?
Yes, I think so. How much is that?
Oh, well, let me see. One easel, oils, canvases, brushes, $64.92.
Well, here you are.
Hilton, well, don't tell me you've taken a painting.
Oh, Myers. And what if I am? Any objections?
No, none whatever. As a matter of fact, it seems like a prudent move on your part, George. You read the Chronicle, Carruthers' review of your last, you'll pardon the expression, novel.
I always make it a point to avoid dull reading.
But the Chronicle's readers aren't so discriminating. And after all, Carruthers is on the board of the Novel of the Month Club. That's not good, George. That's not good.
One of these days, somebody's going to get fed up with your smug little innuendos, and the Chronicle would be minus one art editor.
That a threat, George.
Call it a warning.
Excuse me, sir, but you're changed.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
Well, it's been nice seeing you, George. Oh, and good luck in your new career. No, seriously, who knows? You may be America's next Christopher Grayson.
I could have throttled him where he stood. Not only because, like so many other stupid people, he couldn't understand my books. No, I hated him even more because of Carol. You see, we were both after the same woman. When I got back to the apartment, Grayson was still asleep. I unwrapped the materials I'd bought and set them carefully in the next room where he could easily bump into them. And then I woke him up.
Oh, where is this? Who are you?
I'm George Hilton. Remember, I picked you up yesterday in a Bowery flophouse. This is my place.
Ah, yes, I remember now. Yes. Oh, what a head.
I've got to step out for a little while, but make yourself at home. Wash up, raid the icebox, I'll dissect you later.
Huh?
Oh, we made a bargain yesterday. You were to tell me all about life in flophouses, and I was going to stand your living expenses.
Well, a bargain's a bargain, I always say. Oh, bring back another bottle of this stuff here, will you? It packs a beautiful wallop.
I purposely stayed away over 2 hours. This was the acid test. A real artist never forgets. His technique remains part of him always, like a passion for a beautiful woman. That's how it was with Grayson. When I returned, he was mixing oils. He'd already drawn some preliminary lines, and there was a feverish gleam in his eyes, as if he'd just been reunited with the one thing in the world he loved. Then he saw me and stopped.
Oh. Well, I'm sorry, I couldn't help myself. When I saw these, I was just like sleepwalking. I can't explain it, it just happened. Well, I guess I've ruined your canvas.
Ruined? Why, you're making it come to life. Say, go ahead, finish it. You know what they say about mental associations? Well, maybe your memory will come back to you.
I can keep painting you. You don't mind?
Mind? No, I don't mind. A week passed. In between brandies, he was painting more and more. I knew that soon now he would actually complete a picture. There must have been something in my voice, because when I called Carol up, she said...
George, you sound like the cat that swallowed the canary. What's up?
Something big, Carol. I can't tell you what just yet, but...
Why? How mysterious can we get?
If it comes out right, you'll get all the things I've always wanted to give you.
Really? Am I to suppose the rich aunt is dying and you have great expectations.
Oh, look, why must you all... Can't you ever take me seriously?
Sorry, darling.
If you must know, I'm expecting money from...
Yeah?
From another source.
Oh, George, another novel. No offense, you're a marvelous writer, darling. It's just that you don't seem to give the public what it likes.
What the publishers think it likes, you mean?
Well, they're the ones who pay you, aren't they? George, darling, you're
Hello, sweetie.
George, I'll have to ring off now. Teddy Myers is here. We're off to Gypsy's for Spanish food.
Goodbye. Days later, Grayson's picture was done. I don't think any picture was ever finished quite the same way. Two brush strokes and a drink. Two more brush strokes and another drink. That was about the tempo. I held it in my hand. It was the real article, all right. And suddenly I noticed, down in the corner, down in the right-hand corner, were the initials CG.
What happened to that bottle of scotch? What happened, I said?
Never mind the scotch.
Oh, I see. It's on... Hey, let go of me.
Not until you explain this.
Explain? What are you talking about?
These initials. Why did you put in these initials?
Initials? What do you mean, initials, initials? I don't see any... What do you know? I wonder why I did that.
He stood there swaying. Then all of a sudden, the brush dropped out of his hand and he slid to the floor, passed out, drunk. But I knew now I had to get him to work faster. I had to have more paintings before he regained his memory. When I had them, well, he had risen from the dead like Lazarus. He'd be dead again soon. This time he would stay that way, and I'd be rich. Several days later, I paid Maggots a visit. He was the biggest art dealer in town. But I can still remember the look on his face when he unwrapped the package I'd brought with me.
This painting. Where did you get this painting?
Well, I bought it from Grayson 6 years ago, just before his death. He sold me a number of paintings. You like it?
Like it? It's magnificent.
One of the best, I'd say.
Well, not exactly. I mean, there is some careless brushwork here and there, but the subject matter... This is a new Grayson. Grayson the morbid, the decadent. Grayson the post-impressionist.
How much?
Well, how can you talk about money at a time like this? It's superb. $4,000.
What do you think I am, a fool?
Well, $10,000.
No, you're joking. Why, even the publicity is worth that much, do you?
Well, I'll give you $15,000, no more. Provided, of course, you give me first option on any others you have.
$20,000 or I go somewhere else.
Oh, all right, but... When can I see the others?
In due time, Maggot. In due time. The next day, it was all in the papers. On Sunday, Ted Myers wrote a learned dissertation on the social significance of Grayson's last period and how Grayson symbolized the frustration of the 20th century. Myers, always so sure of himself, always so condescending. And not more than a few hours after Myers' column hit the newsstands, I heard from Carol.
Darling, I've been reading all about it. Why on earth didn't you tell me?
I tried to, Carol, but you wouldn't listen, remember?
Oh, but George, I didn't dream. I thought it was just another impractical scheme. Look, darling, why don't you drop by my apartment tonight? Say about 8? I'll be alone. We can talk.
I'll be there.
Don't be late, then. Bye, darling.
Money. Now that I had money, Carol was mine. I knew that. She wormed a diamond bracelet out of me that evening. At least I promised to get her one. She never even once mentioned Teddy. All the next week, I let Grayson pretty much alone. He painted like a madman, a strange, almost crafty look in his eyes. He was interested in nothing but his painting and his bottle. But it was getting to be a race against time.
Murder in the cabin. Murder in the cabin.
What's that?
Murder in the cabin. I don't know. It's a title or something.
Why do you think it's a title?
I don't know why. Doesn't mean anything, but I...
But what?
Well, somehow I'm sure it has something to do with me. My past, I mean.
You see what I mean now by A Race Against Time? Murder in the Cabin was one of his most famous paintings. Every day now he said things like that, recalled things that convinced me he was regaining his memory. I couldn't take chances now. So I rented a cabin in the Catskills and drove up with Grayson. We got moved in, and then after a few days I left him there, locked in, and came back to town to get some clothes I'd left in the apartment.
Hello, George.
Myers.
Aren't you going to let me in?
What do you want?
Calm, calm. That's no way to talk to a friend who's about to save you from a prison sentence. That's better.
What are you talking about?
Nice place you have here, George. A bit bourgeois, but... nice chair, too. Comfortable.
Get to the point.
By all means. George, it pains me to say this, but you are a liar, a kidnapper, and a thief.
Get out of here.
When I saw you buying art equipment, I thought it strange that a man who's always expressed his aversion to painting should suddenly undergo a change of heart.
You thought it strange, well?
Yes. I merely thought it strange. However, when you foisted a Grayson on Maggard 4 weeks ago, I became suspicious. So for the past week, I've been, to put it crudely, shadowing
Myers,
you. Now, I could have given you away the other morning, after I saw you leave that cabin at the Catskills. After I looked in at the window and saw Christopher Grayson.
How much do you want?
Well, cash doesn't interest me, George. I want to be your partner.
I don't understand.
You have a clever little scheme, George. Clever. It has distinct possibilities.
Yes, but not very much longer. Grayson's recovering his memory.
Oh, he has amnesia?
Yes, but it's only a matter of time before he finds out who he is.
No, we have to work fast. How many pictures has he done?
5. Look, but see here, I haven't...
My dear fellow, you have no choice. As for our little past differences, well, let's let bygones be bygones, huh?
Yes. Why not?
That's the attitude.
2 heads are better than 1, they say.
Of course. Oh, I want to meet Grayson, George. Shall we drive up to your cabin? My car's outside.
All right. Just as soon as I get out some sherry, we ought to drink to our new friendship.
Splendid, George. You know, I have the feeling this is going to be a long and fruitful association. In fact, I have the perfect name for us. Christopher Grayson Incorporated. A little cold. Sherry should fix me up.
Yes. It should. Better take it easy around those corners.
Not afraid, are you, George?
No, but...
That's the trouble with you, George. You lack backbone.
There's such a thing as recklessness. Well, for instance, weren't you afraid I might kill you when you came to blackmail me?
You kill me? No, you're just not the type, George.
I'm not?
No. Oh, you might be capable of jaywalking or even shoplifting, but murder...
What's the matter? Are you getting sleepy?
Oh, I can't understand it. I had 10 hours sleep last night.
Easy now. Just let's get over to the side of the road here. It's all right. Relax. That's it. Then I'll take the wheel.
Oh, it's all right. I just... All right, Steph. Thanks. You can take the wheel.
Stopped the car just on the edge. The drop off the mountain was a good 2,000 feet. Myers was still slumped against the steering wheel. The sleeping powder I'd emptied into his sherry was working perfectly. I got out of the car quickly. I looked up and down the road, no cars in sight. I propped Myers up behind the wheel. Then I started the car. And just as it reached the edge, I jumped clear. Better than I'd expected. The car burst into flames. I stood there watching it, thinking I'd never hear his mocking laugh again. More important, Christopher Grayson Incorporated had only 1 stockholder again.
day. I called you twice. No one answered the phone.
Well, I was out, darling. I saw my publishers. They like the publicity I've been getting. They want another book.
Oh, dearest, that's wonderful. Would you like to kiss me now or later?
Hmm? Oh, Carol, I love you. Beyond words. We'll be happy together. We must. We'll go away somewhere, somewhere far away.
The Riviera? Monte Carlo?
Anywhere you say. I'll sell the rest of the paintings tomorrow. And then we'll go away. The next day I sold them all. Maggard fondled them like an ecstatic lover. As for me, the check for $100,000 felt very, very good. Thursday morning, I cashed it. Then after reserving two tickets on the plane for Rio, I drove up to the cabin, the money under the front seat. I reached the cabin about 2:00. I unlocked the door slowly. Grayson was on the cot. He was staring right at me, the drunken, stupid fool. I raised my gun. I took careful aim.
Well, D.A., quite a case, huh?
Yeah, I should say. Ingenious fellow, this Hilton. How'd you catch him?
We didn't.
I don't get it.
You see, D.A., it's my theory that 6 years ago, Grayson staged his own death with his wife's help.
What?
He took out a $25,000 insurance policy, then disappeared. We know that. The burning could have been faked, some derelict, maybe.
Now, wait a minute. How about his wife's suicide?
Yeah, she could have been murdered.
Murdered?
That's right, by Grayson. Decided to grab all the insurance money for himself, killed her, forged the suicide note.
But what about his amnesia?
Amnesia? What amnesia? Hilton thought he was using Grayson. Well, actually, the shoe was on the other foot.
Imagine how Grayson must have felt. He'd become famous, but after he was dead. By this time, his money was gone.
Yeah, after all, 6 years of living, wine, women. Maybe he was even robbed, who knows. Anyway, he couldn't show up.
Sure, he might have a murder rap pinned on him.
That's right. Now, Maggot called us this afternoon and said that he'd been swindled. The paint wasn't 6 years old under microscopic examination. So, we traced Hilton to his Catskills cabin.
And?
And we nabbed Grayson, making a getaway with a gun and $100,000 in his pocket. Hilton was inside with three slugs in him. Lived 20 minutes.
Murder in the cabin.
Tonight, the Philip Morris Playhouse presented Murder Needs an Artist, produced, edited, and directed by William Spear. Our star, Vincent Price, will be back in a moment for a curtain call.
Tonight should have seemed like typecasting to you, Mr. Price, what with the time you spend in real life in the art world.
It certainly did, Johnny. I felt right at home. Tell me, what's this I hear about Coronet Magazine's June issue, which will tell everyone about your Philip Morris Playhouse?
Well, Coronet is giving us a nice write-up and calls our producer, Bill Spear, the maestro of the mic. How about that?
Well, I must see that. And in the meanwhile, who's to be your guest next week, Johnny?
Howard Duff, the Sam Spade of the mic, who's going to be chased for a change. And thank you again for another exciting evening.
Thank you, Johnny. Good night.
Good night, Mr. Price.
Now goodbye, Johnny. See you next Friday, same time, same station, when once again we will present the Philip Morris Playhouse, starring Howard Duff. Until then... Vincent Price will soon be seen in Curtain Call at Cactus Creek, a Universal International Technicolor production. Tonight's original radio play was by Alec Chorney and John Hobbish. Music on the Philip Morris Playhouse is under the direction of Lud Gluskin. All names and characters used on this program are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. This is Art Ballinger saying good night for Philip Morris.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Philip Morris Playhouse on Tuned to Yesterday, a CBS broadcast from May 6th, 1950. Also in that year, Vincent Price was heard on broadcasts of Escape and continuing his role as crime fighter Simon Templar on The Adventures of the Saint. His first radio appearance in the following year would be part of George Fisher's interview show, Hollywood Calling. Here's a moment from that recording.
Vincent, could you give us a serious definition of a ham, quote, actor, which you say you are? Does this ham characteristic, Vincent, apply to serious drama as much as to comedy?
Well, I personally believe there are two definitions that are very much misused in this world. One is amateur, which the French use as meaning a person who loves things. A collector, for instance, is an amateur in France. That means he is a lover of the arts. I think a ham actor is a misused word. It has become used as a definition for a bad actor, but that isn't true. The best actors that you ever knew in your life, most of them, were hams at heart. They loved to act. They loved their profession. They loved to entertain. So I think the word ham actor is a good word.
Then you refer, in a way, to a ham actor as one with amateur enthusiasm.
That's right. I've often felt that when things become too professional, they become a little stale. I love the quality of the amateur in things.
Vincent Price speaking with George Fisher in 1951. And that wraps up this hour of Crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVillier. It's been a pleasure.